Chapter 2. The sound of the Utah Raptor's roar cut short with a splutter as Becca swung a long leg up and kicked it right in the stomach. The rest of the herd cried out behind the shop, and a cold sweat came over me. Our cover was blown, and any hope of escaping without being noticed by the creatures was gone. "Fuck!" I spat, as I screeched to a halt and raised my rifle toward the dino's head. I pulled the trigger quickly, and the bullet lodged right into the beast's ear cavity. The raptor's blood splattered my face as it stumbled, and then it fell flat on its face with an almighty thud. Hey Wan jumped off her bike to help Becca scramble back onto her feet. Then the girls both hauled Becca's motorcycle with all their strength until it was upright, and we heard the army of dinos approaching as the blonde clambered onto her vehicle. "Let's fucking move!" I yelled. My heart was in my throat as I watched the two girls steady themselves, and the first of the herd appeared at the side of the building.
"Go!"
Heywan shouted. The girls sped toward me just as the first raptor spotted us. My engine roared as we tore back down the hill toward the motorway, and the herd roared in unison behind us. I tensed my body and prepared for the snarl of teeth and the slash of long claws at my back, but it didn't come. I glanced over my shoulder as the shop disappeared from sight, and I saw five raptors stand around the dead body and roar after us. They bared their blood-stained teeth, but made no attempt to follow our bikes. They just watched as we vanished from their lair and screamed into the sky, and my stomach knotted while I whipped my head back around.
"What the fuck?"
Becca gasped as we made it back onto the motorway.
"They're not chasing us? They just let us go?"
"The eggs," I breathed, my heart still going a million miles an hour. "They're not leaving the eggs."
"They're staying in the territory,"
Heywan said as she glanced over her shoulder.
"To protect the babies." "Are we sure those fuckers aren't going to start sprinting down after us?"
Becca asked. "Doesn't look like it," I replied as I checked behind me. "Holy shit, that was close."
"The timing was just right,"
Heywan said.
"The hatching stage means they won't leave the area, but they don't have anything they need to hunt for to feed yet. God help the next people who stop there,"
Becca said.
"They're going to be baby dino breakfast."
"I think we got lucky there," I replied. "I wouldn't like to be around when they're teaching Dino Jr. how to hunt."
"Thank you, by the way."
Becca let out a loud exhale of breath.
"Both of you. Holy crap. I think I pissed myself a little when that dino jumped at me." "Gross."
Heywan giggled.
"But we will always save each other. We're family."
"Damn right," I agreed. "We help each other. That's what we do."
"You were right, Jason,"
Heywan said. "About what?" I asked.
"The babies,"
the Asian girl replied.
"If we had killed them back there, we would all be dead now for sure. Protecting their babies is the only thing keeping them there."
"It was just a hunch," I admitted. "But I'm glad we did it, and now we know how protective they are of their young." I shivered slightly as I thought about the hatching dinosaurs and the new generation of beasts that were being brought into the world. There was a rumble from above us, and a small drop of rain splattered my cheek. I wiped it away and glanced at the dino blood which had come off on my palm. "I'm looking forward to my next shower," I groaned, as I wiped more of the sticky blood off with my sleeve. "I think that deodorant will come in handy after all, even if it's just to mask the stench of dino blood." We swung back onto the highway from the exit road and continued down the quiet concrete. Our bike engines and the rumble of wind were the only sounds that echoed around us.
"We'll need to get on the M-180,
Becca called.
"I think that's coming up pretty soon. Just keep an eye on the signs."
We drove past more empty cars and abandoned bikes, and I tried not to look at them too closely. It was still tough to see the aftermath of dino attacks, and there were too many signs of the lives that had been torn apart so suddenly. Judging by the vehicles scattered along the roads, plenty of other people had tried to escape the cities and flee to the countryside for safety. I glanced down at one of the objects on the road and saw that it was a small teddy bear, and I sighed and hoped that whatever kid it belonged to had somehow managed to escape. Clearly, the countryside wasn't much safer than the cities anymore. It really did seem that the portals had opened up everywhere, and I wondered if there was any place left on Earth that remained untouched by the prehistoric creatures.
"Guys!"
Becca hissed suddenly as we neared an overhead bridge.
"Look! Under there, to the right!"
We slowed down and squinted into the dark section of road, which was covered by the shadow of the bridge. Over on the right side of the highway, there was the huge shape of a triceratops. The massive creature seemed to be asleep, and the low rumble of its deep breathing echoed under the bridge. Beside the sleeping dino was a huge nest with three eggs inside. They were twice the size of the raptor's young and were a pale blue color. "Shit," I muttered under my breath. Although the dinosaur was an herbivore, that didn't mean it wouldn't charge at us, so we kept as far over to the left as we could while we passed it. I couldn't see any cracks in the eggs, and I wondered how long it took for Triceratops babies to hatch. We waited until we cleared the bridge before we dared to speak again, and I glanced over my shoulder to check we hadn't woken the Triceratops. When we were a good few feet away from the slumbering beast, I let out a sigh.
"Another nest,"
Haywan said as she slowed her bike to fall in line with me.
"Oh, this can't be good. Do you think it's dino mating season?"
Becca asked from my other side. "I think they're making themselves at home," I said. "I'm no expert, but they've been here for a while now, and we don't seem to be gaining the upper hand. Maybe they're getting over the initial shock of the change of scenery, and they're starting to get on with what they normally do."
"Things are only getting worse,"
Becca said.
"I mean, I know this whole thing is a giant shit show already, but don't you just get that feeling that nothing we do will get rid of them?"
We drove past a car which had a small fire in the engine, and I knew exactly what Becca was talking about. Ever since I saw that raptor nest at the gas station, I had an uneasy feeling in the pit of my stomach that wouldn't go away, and it hadn't been there up until now. When the dino attacks first started, I had been fueled by adrenaline and determination to survive no matter the odds, and although those feelings were still there, pure dread had officially joined the mix. "They're smarter than we could have expected," I said, as I shook myself out of my thoughts. "I don't think anyone was prepared for how organized they seem to be."
"Imagine if they all start a breed,"
Becca said.
"And the dinosaurs are suddenly doubled in numbers. There's no way humans could win against that kind of threat. We're clearly not doing so well as a species as it is, but this is just..."
"I know," I gently cut in. "I think the airbase really showed us a glimpse of how the fight is going. If the military is struggling, then who else is meant to defeat these things?"
"I wish we could see how other countries are doing,"
Haywan said.
"Maybe one of the governments has been successful. Surely someone has worked out how to stop them."
"Let's hope that DNA we delivered will help," I sighed. "We risked our lives enough times for it, so we've got to believe that it'll further the military's understanding of what we're up against." A sign for the M-180 came into view, and we all gagged as we passed a massive pile of dino dung beside it. Then we took the exit road and sped onto the motorway. There was a distant roar, but no visible threats as we started off down the new road. Much like the A-15, it was littered with abandoned cars, and there were clothes and various rations strewn over the ground.
"I think the dinos will get even more hostile,"
Becca called out as we picked up our speed again and sped past a truck-sized pool of blood.
"Especially if they all start nesting and giving birth. They will be protective of their nests,"
Haywan agreed.
"They are already territorial, but this will be another level."
The thought of a new generation of dinosaurs weighed on me as we drove. I knew that we were tough as a trio, and we would protect each other at whatever cost. But how long could we keep going if the dino population doubled, then tripled? Still, I knew I would never let harm come to either of my girls, no matter how bad things got. And all I could do was prepare for whatever the world threw at us next. We drove in silence for a while, and although I was deep in thought, I was constantly on guard as we sped down the motorway.
"It's been ages since we've seen anyone alive,"
Becca said after a while.
"I thought we might pass someone on the highways, like an apocalyptic hitchhiker."
"I guess these big roads aren't a great spot to hide," I pointed out. "There's cars to hide in, but other than that, it's an open space with nowhere to run to. I wouldn't hitchhike out here if you paid me."
"We should check our navigation,"
Haywan called.
"Make sure we're definitely on the right path. Not that I doubt your memory, Becca." "Don't worry,"
the blonde laughed.
"You're right. We should make sure we're taking the fastest route."
We slowed down as we passed a black Mini Cooper, and Becca pulled her phone out from her inner pocket as soon as we all came to a stop. I stretched my back and arms to loosen up a bit, and Haywan did the same with her legs while we waited for Becca's update. All three of us had rain-swept hair and sheens of water slicking our faces, But it was better than dino blood and sweat, and it wasn't so cold that I minded at all.
I've got one bar of signal,
the Brit said as she waved her phone around to try and improve things.
The internet and social media are still not loading anything, though.
Is the GPS still working? I asked.
Barely,
the blonde replied as she tapped her screen.
It's slow as anything, but it is loading. Okay, so if we keep along the motorway, we'll pass Barton upon Humbar. Just make sure we exit before the A180 and we'll reach the town soon enough. There's a bridge there we need to cross to get to Ravenscar.
Let's hope it's still standing, I said. And I could really do without a giant scorpion this time.
Don't remind me.
Heiwan shuddered her shoulders.
I think that was worse than the T-Rex.
We started off again, and I tried to enjoy the feeling of wind in my hair and fresh air in my lungs as we drove. I made sure to keep an eye on the sky periodically, since we'd met plenty of flying dinosaurs in the last few weeks, and they'd proven to be just as deadly as their grounded counterparts. After a while, the gentle rain eased up, and the sun started to poke out from behind the gray clouds. The beams warmed my damp face, and I smiled at the two beautiful girls beside me. I tried not to notice the stench that came from my drenched sleeve, though. I could still smell the dried dino blood on the fabric, and I kept remembering the steaming shower I had back at the airbase.
What are you looking forward to most?
Heiwan asked as her raven-black hair danced in the wind behind her.
When you see your mum? Just hugging her?
Becca smiled.
I want to smell that awful flowery perfume she always wears, and just know that she's safe. I feel like we've been on this journey forever.
We'll be with her soon, I assured her. Look, I think that sign is for Barton upon Humbar. The large road sign had been trampled over and had huge dents warping the metal, which made it difficult to read. But as we got closer, I could see it pointed us toward the right place. The road narrowed, and as we approached the town, there were less cars on the road. There was a faint smell of burning in the air, so we slowed our bikes down to take in the surroundings. There were red brick houses ahead and small park areas with flower beds and benches. I imagined they were probably well kept months ago, but now, the pansies had been dug up and strewn all over the muddy, overgrown grass. Like most residential areas we encountered lately, it looked abandoned, and there were personal belongings scattered over the roads and sidewalk. Looks like this place was hit hard, I said, as I glanced at the broken windows of the houses ahead. Keep your guard up. There could be people holed up in one of the buildings.
The big open roads feel safer somehow,
Becca said as we started to drive slowly into the town center.
In the towns and cities, it just feels like we're being watched all the time. I know what you mean,
Heiwan agreed.
There's so many windows and hiding spots.
We weaved in and out of the crashed cars, and the red brick houses lined the sidewalk in various states of disarray. Some had every window smashed, and others looked barely touched, as if there could be a normal family inside sitting down to lunch. But I was well aware it was more likely the residents had become lunch. Can you hear something? I asked as I strained my ears. Am I going crazy? I swear I can hear music. As we drove along, the sound got louder, and I was certain I could hear an unsettling, slowed-down version of Ring Around the Rosie.
It's an icy,
Becca said.
A what?
Heiwan snorted.
An ice cream van. You know, they always play the little nursery rhymes to attract kids. It sounds creepy,
Heiwan said, and I had to agree. We turned a corner to see a beaten-up, brightly colored truck that blocked the road. It had a badly painted cartoon horse across the side, and the large center window was open with cones still displayed next to a price list. We slowed to a halt and glanced at each other as the song echoed around the street. There were no side roads to go down to avoid the truck. Our only way forward was onto the sidewalk and around it.
The noise must attract dinos,
Heiwan asked as she glanced upwards.
Maybe it's been playing for weeks,
Becca suggested.
Maybe any dinosaurs nearby have realized it's not humans making the sound and they've gotten bored of it. Or gone crazy having to listen to it on loop.
Heiwan snickered. The truck looks pretty intact, I pointed out. That could mean it's lived in by people. I'll drive by first and check we're still alone, okay?
Okay,
Becca agreed as she swung her gun to her front.
We'll be ready to shoot if you need us. Be careful, Jason,
Heiwan said as she steadied her weapon. I nodded, then bumped my bike onto the low sidewalk. The girls stationed themselves on either side of the truck with their rifles poised and ready to fire, and I sped down past the colorful van. Once I was on the other side, I swerved quickly to face it, and I could tell there was no creature or human inside. "It's clear," I called, and the girls drove over to meet me. The windowless side of the vehicle had a clown painted on it, and it was just as horrifying as the horse. "Who decided this was fun for kids?" I asked, as we stared at the painting with disgust. "That thing looks scarier than the raptors." The back of the truck was open, and I quickly peeked through the doors to examine the contents. There was nobody inside, just a floor covered in melted ice cream and an open cash register. I wondered if people were still stealing money. Surely there was no point at this stage.
"No blood,"
Becca noticed.
"Maybe whoever owns it got out in time."
"Let's hope so," I said. "Maybe we should turn that awful noise off." The nursery rhyme was so slowed down it sounded like something from a horror movie, and it made the ugly clown even worse to look at.
"I think we should leave it playing,"
Haywan replied.
"Maybe it will draw dinosaurs away from people's hiding spots. It could even save a life if it distracts one of them."
"Fair enough," I allowed. "The creepy clown machine will live to fight another day."
"I can see the bridge from here,"
Becca said as she pointed above the rooftops. The tall columns peaked above the red brick houses, and it looked like we were close to the river. There was a loud screech nearby, and we instinctively raised our guns as we checked the surrounding area. I couldn't see any flickers of movement or shadows, and it seemed that whatever had made the noise wasn't hot on our trails. Yet. "Let's go," I urged, as I swung my rifle over my shoulder. "If we can avoid meeting whatever made that noise, then let's do it." We carefully got our bikes back down onto the road and started to make our way through the town center. There were a few abandoned cars at the side of the sidewalk, and most of them had their doors open and windows smashed. The shriek came again, this time closer, and I wondered if it was coming from inside one of the surrounding houses. Part of me wanted to check the houses for survivors, but I knew that we had to keep moving to stay alive. There was a loud thump, and a sound of breaking glass. The girls glanced at me, but none of us spoke. We all knew the best thing to do was be as fast and as silent as possible. It was a survival tactic that had gotten us halfway across England so far. We sped up and tore down the road without looking back. Haywan had the fastest bike, so she was slightly ahead, and she glanced over her shoulder at us with a grim look. I soon realized what had caught her attention as we drove by a little cottage with a thatched roof and bright garden. The roof had a hole burned in the middle, and there was a dried blood stain that went right from the sidewalk all the way up the garden path, over the steps, and into the house. Something had clearly dragged its kill inside. The door sat open wide, and half a human leg grotesquely stuck out of the house.
"Oh, God,"
Becca muttered, and we sped up even more before we met whatever had made the mess. The town center was bright and full of little independent shop fronts. We drove past a florist, which had piles of dead flowers outside, a little pub with a battered down door, and a post office that had been boarded up. I was even more aware that someone or something could be watching us, like Becca had said. And there were so many houses around us that it was impossible to keep our eyes on all of them. We kept close to the parked cars as we drove, to be as covered as possible from the view of the various windows. As we left the town center, the road became slightly wider, and when we turned a right-hand corner, the Barton-upon-Humbar Bridge came into view. It was a simple, gray suspension bridge that towered above a broad river. The road that led to it had a couple of abandoned cars, but was mostly clear, and the side of the road turned from housing estates to long, dirty fields. "What is that?" I asked, as I got a good look at the structure ahead of us. There seemed to be something blocking the entire two-lane entrance onto the bridge, and in the middle there was some kind of fort. It was a rectangular shape made of steel sheets that I figured could have been taken from a construction site. The makeshift building took up about a quarter of the road's width, and on either side of the fort, large vans and cars had been parked from top to tail to create a barrier across the entire road. It certainly looked like it had been planned well, and there would be no easy way through without an encounter with whoever had made the structure.
"That looks well barricaded,"
Haywan said, as we slowed to a halt and we took in the wall of metal ahead. Is there another way around? I asked. There's no chance we could fit the bikes through any of those vehicles. Whoever built this clearly didn't want any visitors.
There's not another crossing anywhere close,
Becca said.
We would need to drive for miles to get to another bridge.
Okay. I nodded and considered the hoard of various materials that spanned the entire width of the bridge road. Well, at least we know we're dealing with humans and not dinosaurs, so we can plan accordingly.
Let's hope,
Becca snorted.
If the dinos have started building forts out of cars and steel, I think our time is up.
I guess we'll have to see who's home, I said.
Everyone wearing their vests?
Haywan asked. I nodded and adjusted the bulletproof armor we had been given from the Scampton airbase. The girls made sure they had their vests tightly secured, and we examined the road ahead.
There's not really a subtle way to get over there,
Becca said as she looked around the open fields beside us.
They're going to see us coming.
They probably already have, I admitted. Let's approach slow and steady, see if we can talk with whoever's behind there.
They might not even be there anymore,
Haywan said as we started to drive down the wide road.
Oh, look at the river.
As we got closer, we could properly see under the bridge, and there was only a tiny amount of water. On either side of the structure, there were huge dams made of rock and brick, which meant there was nothing flowing underneath, and I immediately understood why. They blocked up the river so none of those massive shark creatures can get below them, I said. That's smart.
Must have taken forever,
Becca said.
This town must have some seriously strong locals.
Clever ones, too, I nodded. Which means we need to be even more careful with our guns and supplies. They might want what we have, and lately no one's been in the mood to ask nicely. As we neared the bridge, we could see the man-made fort more clearly, and it was just as impressive up close. There were massive metal sheets layered up to block the road just ahead of the fort, and I could see a similar approach was used to construct a sturdy roof. It would definitely be a good hiding spot from most attackers, especially given the hefty suspension system that jutted up on either side. Just to the right of the structure, there was a gray van parked up against the wall, and I kept a wary eye on the vehicle as we stopped behind it. We swung our rifles over our shoulders and gripped the powerful weapons tightly to be ready for whatever came out of the fortress. Then I glanced at the girls on either side of me, and we waited for someone to approach us or speak. The sun had emerged through the clouds by now, and it reflected off the metal panels in an almost blinding way. But I could see a line of large nails had been embedded in a stretch of rubber material and laid down in front of the entrance of the bridge. A few silent minutes passed, and the only sound was the cry of some distressed gulls above us.
Maybe it is empty,
Haywan said. But at that moment there was a hurried shuffling noise, and a huge man leapt out from behind the parked van. Hands up, he snarled. But none of us moved an inch as we remained with our rifles at the ready. The middle-aged man looked like he could snap us in half if he wanted to, and he held a grubby-looking pistol in his gloved hands. Bushy ginger hair stuck out from his woolly hat, and his face was weather-beaten and freckled. "Turn around," the man spat as he glared at our guns. "Go, there's nothing for yous here." "We're not here for any trouble," I calmly replied. "We just want to cross the bridge. It's urgent." "Oh, is it?" the man scoffed. "Well, you can urgently fuck off to another bridge, got it?" "Sir, none of us are looking for a fight," I tried. "All we want is to cross the river. I'm sure you've got more people than us inside that fort. We aren't going to try anything funny." "You a Yank?" the man asked. "What the hell are you doing out here, anyway?" There was a creak of metal, and one of the panels was shifted to the left from the inside. It created a little doorway so there was just enough space for the two people who inched out onto the road with us. One was a young, thin man with thick glasses. The other was a woman who looked a few years older than me, and she had a grown-out buzz cut and a nose ring. Both of them were unarmed, but when they saw all four of us out here in a standoff, they halted on the spot.
"What's all this?"
the woman growled.
"Who are you?"
"My name's Jason," I answered. And I finally lowered my gun as I considered how young the guy beside her looked. He couldn't have been more than 16, and judging by his muscle mass, he was the least threatening among us. "This is Haywan and Becca. We're trying to get to Ravenscar."
"To get to my mum,"
Becca added pleadingly, and both girls lowered their weapons in a gesture of good faith.
"We're just trying to pass through, I swear."
The woman narrowed her eyes, and the young man shuffled awkwardly.
"Hey, They seem nice, the young man muttered, and I flashed him a grateful smile.
Jesus, Tim,
the woman sighed.
The first pretty girls you see, and you're willing to risk all of our lives? They still got guns on them. Don't let the tits fool you.
Tim's face flushed pink, and he stared down at the ground while the women rolled their eyes. The large man snorted and glanced over our shoulders, and I knew he must be keeping watch for any attacking dinos. It seemed he was the outpost guard, and I wasn't surprised, considering he was certainly built for the job. We can offer a trade, I said. We can't spare many supplies, but maybe we have something you need?
We have food,
Heiwan said.
Bottled water, too.
The short-haired woman's eyes flickered down to our bulging backpacks, and she sighed.
Look,
she finally said.
You might be really nice folk, but with all that shit on your bikes and those damn guns, I can't let you through. You can mow us down the second we open the doors. Like Larry said, you better fuck off to another bridge.
Larry smirked at me and showed off his wonky yellow teeth. What's your name? I asked the woman.
Gray,
she replied.
Well, that's what I go by.
Nice to meet you, I said. Look, we've come from Cambridge. What if we not only gave you some food, but news of what the hell's going on down south? We fought a shitload of dinosaurs, and we've learned a lot about them.
We could help you,
Heiwan nodded.
Knowledge is useful.
The young man and Gray looked at each other, and I knew we'd almost convinced them. There were murmurs coming from inside the metal fort, too, and it sounded like they had quite a few people hidden on the other side of the barricade. I kept my hands on my lowered rifle just in case, but I could tell these folks weren't the shoot-'em-up types. They were just some locals trying to get by and stand their ground, and I doubted they had much more than the one firearm Larry still had trained on us. It's too risky, the old guy grumbled, and he finally lowered his gun. We've had visitors before. They robbed half of our supplies after we let them inside. Nearly threw one of our folks over the bridge in the process.
We've only survived by sticking together,
Gray nodded.
I'm really sorry. You need to find another way.
What about a weapon? I asked, and the bridge group all stared at me. What if I gave you a grenade?
Jason,
Becca muttered.
We only have that one left. We might need it.
We'll make it all right, I countered. We need to get over this bridge, and if parting with the grenade is what it takes, then we'll need to make that sacrifice.
A grenade?
Gray asked.
You're serious?
Yes, I assured her. A grenade and some food in exchange to cross the river. You're not going to get a deal like that again.
You might need it one day,
Heiwan added.
If something big comes along and decides it also wants to cross?
Gray bit her lip and glanced at her two companions. Larry scratched his head and stared at Heiwan while Tim chewed his nails.
How the hell did you get a grenade?
Gray asked with narrowed eyes.
Are you soldiers?
Not technically, I grinned. But we kinda got an honorary badge from the airbase. We've gone through a lot and been rewarded for it.
I'll need to talk with the others,
Gray decided.
Wait here.
With that, she pulled Tim back into the shadows, and the metal door was slammed back into place in front of us. Larry shrugged and kept his eyes on the town behind us, and the girls glanced at me nervously. See anything big? I asked. We heard a cry as we drove through the town center, but we didn't see anything alive. There's been a lot of the buggers around, Larry replied gruffly. Packs of the little ones. Some of the big ones that are just here to graze. Think I even saw a baby the other day. We've seen a couple of nests, I nodded. Don't underestimate the babies. I'm sure they'll learn to hunt quickly enough. Yeah. The red-haired man muttered without looking at me. The metal sheet was lifted to the side again after a few minutes, and Gray stuck her head out.
Okay,
she said.
But we have a few conditions.
Of course, I said, as Becca grinned. Let's make this as smooth as... I was interrupted by the sound of a car engine in the distance, and it sounded like it was tearing toward us from the town. We whipped our heads around and saw a khaki jeep barreling down the deserted road, and it swerved past a few rogue cars on its way to the bridge. That looks like the military ones, I said, as we all restarted our engines and brought the bikes around to face down the road. And it looks like whoever is in it is in a hurry. The three of us planted our feet on the concrete and steadied our rifles toward the vehicle, but it showed no signs of slowing down as it hurtled past the fields. Larry pointed his gun as well, and he shooed Gray and Tim back into the fort. I prepared myself for the car to simply try and mow through us to get to the bridge, and I made sure I was ready to drive if I needed to. My finger rested on my trigger as the Jeep screeched to a halt inches away from us, and the driver's door swung open. Becca was closest to the car, and she let out a gasp and lowered her gun as I heard footsteps land on the ground. Seconds later, a figure stumbled into view. It was Corporal Grant from the military base in Scampton.
"Jason,"
the woman gasped.
"I can't believe I found you."